Welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Hey everybody, this is the Josh Meister and welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. We just got finished watching season 6, episode 7, which is entitled Dr. Linus. Of course, a Ben-centric episode. And before we dig into this episode, I've got a few notes from the previous episode, that things that we didn't mention on the podcast last week. And these were all things that were pointed out on Geronimo Jack's Beard, which, as I've mentioned before, is Jorge Garcia's podcast. He, of course, plays Hurley on the show. And one of the things that he pointed out is something that, of course, we wouldn't necessarily know because it's actually in the script. And the script actually says that something's off about Saeed's reflection in the opening scene. So it might be worth rewatching that scene to see if you can figure out what that is. It was unclear. I mean, that's all the script said, apparently, but... So it's not entirely clear whether that just meant that this is a flash sideways and that it's, you know, therefore something's off, or whether there's something more interesting there, like maybe the reflection is backwards or who knows, something completely weird like that. And so it's worth rewatching that the beginning of that episode to see if you can figure out what might be off about his reflection. All right. Next thing, Dogen's book. It says in the script that the book that Dogen was reading in the episode is called Deep River by Shusaku Endo. And so we'll talk a little bit about this book. And interestingly, though, I mean, I went back and tried to find screen caps of the book, and I couldn't find any screen caps that clearly showed the title of the book. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It's almost like they went to the trouble of naming the book in the script, but it didn't quite make it to the screen, or at least not, you know, based on the screen caps that I looked up. But so here's a little bit about that book. And I honestly, just right before we were recording this, I went back and re-listened to that part of Geronimo Jack's Beard to find out what the name of the book was. So I don't know how much this directly relates to the story, but in any case, here's the summary from Wikipedia for the novel. Deep River is a novel by Shusaku Endo, published in 1993. It was regarded as one of Endo's most important novels. When he died in 1996, only two novels were chosen to be placed inside his coffin. Deep River was one of them. And it gives a kind of a plot summary, and it seems to have a lot to do with kind of various religions and things like that, which shouldn't be too surprising because, you know, there have been many, many religions that have been referenced on Lost, whether directly or indirectly. And at the beginning of the plot summary, it says the story traces the journey of four Japanese tourists on a tour to India. Each of these tourists goes to India for different purposes and with different expectations. Even though the tour is interrupted when Prime Minister Indira Gandhi is assassinated by militant Sikhs, each of these tourists finds their own spiritual discovery on the banks of the Ganges River. So one interesting thing there, of course, obviously, you know, Dogen is Japanese or, you know, we know he speaks Japanese, and, so it, not too surprising that the book traces the journey of Japanese tourists. You know, there's that connection between Dogen and the book that he's reading. Also, kind of the next little sentence in the plot summary there may relate to Lost, too. It says each of these tourists goes to India for different purposes and with different expectations. One could argue that, you know, the folks who came to the island all went to Australia or were going to Los Angeles for different purposes and different expectations, and many of them could probably be described as tourists. in any case, so if you want to dig more into that and find, you know, see if you can find any more parallels, or if you just want to know more about the book, of course, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And for those listening live, there's a link in the chat as well. Okay, and one more thing from Geronimo Jackbeard related to last week's episode. They pointed out that Jack is one of the doctors in the hospital where Saeed's brother Omer went when he was taken to the hospital. And there were a few screenshots showing this, and so I'll try to look up those screenshots and put them in the show notes. All right, so digging into Dr. Linus, Episode 7. It, surprisingly, I'm so used to it starting out in a flash sideways that it kind of caught me off guard that we actually started out on the island in 2007. And it starts out with Ben running from the temple, and he catches up with Ilana and Frank and Sun and Miles. And Ilana hands the bag of ash that contains Jacob's remains. She hands it to Miles and asks Miles to read Jacob's last thoughts to determine whether Ben is telling the truth and that the man in black killed Jacob, or whether, as Ilana seems to suspect, that Ben actually is the one who killed Jacob. And so Miles does read Jacob's last thoughts and reveals that Ben was in fact the one who killed Jacob. And Ilana tells Ben that Jacob was the closest thing she had to a father, and they all walk away from Ben. It was kind of interesting because obviously we know that Ben kind of followed after them, but he kind of, it's like they didn't directly just kick him out of their group, but I mean, Ben had to know that, you know, if she killed Ilana's sort of father, like a father figure to Ilana, that she was not going to be very happy with him. And obviously she's the leader of the group at the moment. You know, she's the one who seems to have the most inside knowledge and so forth. Bailey Bear has a comment in the chat. How come Dogen could be killed, but Richard could not be killed? Was it only because Jack was sitting with him? You know, that's an interesting question. Well, let's talk about that. Jay Watari in the chat says, I think Dogen let himself be killed. Well, that's an interesting theory. I think that Dogen was caught off guard. Although, you know, he may have a good point there too, though, because we do know at the same time that, you know, Dogen and Lennon both knew that Saeed was infected and that he, you know, could at any moment become evil and on the man in black's side. And yet they still let Saeed come back in the temple and hang out with Dogen in private, like with no guards around or anything. And so, you know, there definitely is, I would say, some merit to that theory that maybe Dogen actually let himself be killed. Kind of like Jacob, I guess, in a sense. Although we do find out in this episode that apparently Jacob at least had hopes that Ben wouldn't actually kill him when it actually came down to it. But at the same time, I guess you could argue that Jacob also let himself be killed. So that's an interesting thought. Josh, a.k.a. Spivvy from the Lost Flashbacks, has a comment about that. The situation with Richard reminds me of the situation with Michael. The island wouldn't let him die until he completed a task. And you know, that's a good comment. I like that, but I almost wonder if maybe that would be better worded. The situation with Jack is reminiscent of the situation with Michael, because maybe, you know, Jack, you know, seems to think that he can't die because he has some destiny, and that's why Jacob sent him to the lighthouse and so forth. You know, Jack closed his eyes and he firmly believed that he would not be blown to smithereens, even though he's the one who set the fuse. But I mean, that's a very good point that the, you know, Richard not being able to kill himself is just like Michael not being able to kill himself. But if you also remember, other people couldn't kill Michael too. And So maybe that's the answer to that. Maybe, you know, Richard can't be killed by other people, you know, like Michael, until his destiny is fulfilled. Or, you know, the other side of that is that, you know, he's more like, say, Dogen or Jacob, somebody who can be killed, in fact. Of course, we don't really even know whether Dogen is somebody who was, in a sense, immortal like Richard. But we know, you know, obviously Jacob was, in some sense, immortal because he had been living for a very long time without aging. Similarly, you know, to Richard, if you want to kind of compare the two in that way. And yet Jacob was able to die. And so it seems like there ought to be some way for Richard to be able to die too. I don't know. So some interesting thoughts. So that was a good question, Bailey Bear, to bring up. All right, so let's go into the first of the Flash Sideways in this episode. So in a 2004 Flash Sideways, well, we presume that it's 2004. This is apparently after John Locke has gone to the temp agency, and now he's been hired as a substitute teacher, so he's subbing at the school where Ben Linus works. So we can presume that this also takes place in 2004 then. And we find out that he's actually Dr. Ben Linus. So he went on to, you know, earn a doctorate degree. If you recall, his friend Leslie Arst, who was also in this episode, was also a doctor. They didn't, I don't think, make reference to that in this episode. But in seasons past, I know they've made reference to how he's Dr. Arst. But so anyway, Dr. Ben Linus is teaching a class, and he talks about the island of Elba being where Napoleon faced his greatest test. And it's kind of funny for him to start out talking about an island, you know. And then in the teacher's lounge, he's talking with Dr. Arst. They apparently work at the same school, and they're friends. Locke is also there in the lounge, and as a substitute teacher, he kind of is listening in on their conversation, and he tells Ben that he should become the principal, that Ben ought to, you know, to do what he can to become the principal if they don't like the way that their current principal does things. And Josh Spivey in the chat comments, why does this one lousy high school have so many doctorate degrees? Yeah, that's true. I guess that is kind of funny. I was kind of, my wife and I were talking about the same thing. I commented, you know, who teaches high school with a doctorate degree? And then she's like, well, we actually do know somebody. She pointed out somebody that we know who actually has a doctorate degree and teaches high school. But yeah, typically if you go for the doctorate, you're probably going for a principal position based on many other people that I know. So, all right. Let's see. I think the next notes that I've got are also from 2004. We find out that Ben is taking care of his father, who's living with him. So Ben's dad, man, why am I drawing a blank on his name? Something Linus. Come on, somebody in the chat help me out here. I can't even believe that I'm drawing a blank right now. Roger, thank you. Of course, Spivy, the one with the answer. Oh, and Diesel99... Paul also came up with the answer right after. Yeah, Roger Workman, right. That was the name on his Dharma logo because he was a workman or workman. yeah, so Roger Linus is living with Ben, and they have a little conversation about how, you know, how Roger chose to leave the Dharma Initiative. It sounds like he volunteered to leave, or, you know, which is kind of interesting. And I guess that must mean that they, chose to leave before the incident, because in this alternate timeline, the island doesn't exist anymore, or, well, it exists, but it's sunk, you know, under the ocean and all that stuff. But, presumably Roger and Ben would not have gotten off the island together on the sub. I mean, not necessarily. We know that like the women and children were sort of ordered to evacuate the island by Dr. Chang, but we don't. I mean, you know, I don't know. We don't really know of any men who got off the island. We don't really know for sure. We haven't really had any confirmation of who got off the island. But Ben, it seems, he was a child at the time, so presumably he would have been on the sub. But probably not Roger, I would think, unless they kept parents with the kids that were leaving, which that does make sense, because you wouldn't want to send a bunch of kids all by themselves. You know, especially in the case of Roger, he didn't have a wife anymore. His wife was deceased, and so Ben couldn't go with his mom on the sub. And so maybe they could have sent Roger along with Ben. So that, I guess that's a possibility. But in any case, at some point, whether it was at the incident or sometime prior, they apparently left the island and left the Dharma Initiative. Spivy says in the chat, this was a huge confirmation to me. It confirms that the split did occur at the bomb. Yeah, that's an interesting point. I don't know if, you know, and not to be contrary, but I don't know if I entirely agree that the split occurred at the bomb. I mean, maybe in the context of the show, I can see that. But, I mean, there are certain things, like, for example, the... I don't know, like the time loops where, you know, fake Locke tells Richard to go tell the real Locke, you know, that he needs to die off the island and things like that. I mean, there are definitely certain things like that where the way that time works without there necessarily being a rift was different up until, it seems, the time of the incident. There were some sort of weird time loops and things that were able to happen in that prior to us ever hearing or seeing anything about an alternate timeline. So that is interesting that, you know, maybe the split did occur at the time of the bomb based, you know, according to possibly according to the writers. It's really hard to tell at this point. I mean, we do know for sure that a split occurred. You know, I don't know if we know for sure, but it's pretty much confirmed that we have two alternate timelines that, basically there was a rift in the time-space continuum, if you want to, you know, call it that, on a fictional show. That hasn't used that exact term, but that when Juliet detonated the hydrogen bomb, that we don't know for sure if that's what actually sunk the island, but it seems as though, based on them jumping back to 2007, that is where the rift occurred. And that's also where the beginning of the season begins. And so we know that this time rift at least went back to that point. Although I can also see where people who are kind of deeper into time travel theory and how it would work would disagree with that being the event that set off the new timeline, that it should have actually been, I would probably argue that it should have actually been in 1974 when some of the Ajira passengers came back and integrated with the Dharma Initiative. I think that really is the point in time where now they're changing events in the past. And so technically, I think that's where the rift should have begun, although I don't know what the writers consider as the beginning point of this time rift. But yeah, anyway, we're getting into time travel theory, and I know a lot of people hate that. So it's not exactly really super important and relevant, but I mean, these questions always come up anytime that they get into like the Flash sideways stuff. So, Bailey Bear says, I'm confused. Didn't Ben get shot before the bomb? Yes, he did, but, he still could have gotten off the island, right? I mean, wouldn't that, I mean, that wouldn't preclude him from being able to leave the island, right? Because he was taken back to live with his family in the Dharma Initiative and all that stuff. But I don't know the exact timeline. I'm having trouble remembering exactly when Ben came back, but I believe he should have been back by that point, if I'm remembering correctly. And so Ben and Roger could have gotten off the island then. And yeah, Ben would have already been shot by then. I don't know if that answers the question or the comment there. And let me know if Bailey Bear, if you have something else that is beyond that, that I didn't quite get to. Okay. So 2007, Ilana doesn't know whether Sun or Jin is the candidate to replace Jacob. She has this conversation with Sun where she talks about what a candidate is and that, you know, she doesn't know. She tells Sun, I don't know whether you or your husband is the candidate, but I need to protect you both just in case. And this is interesting. Ilana says that there are only six left. So if there are only six left, let's see if we can figure out who they are. And of course, I already spent a little bit of time in the chat before we started recording figuring some of these names out. But there's Reyes. And of course, all the names that we know for the candidates are last names. There's Reyes, which, you know, of course refers to, Hugo Hurley. There's Shepard. And since his name is not crossed out, I think we can assume that that means Jack. I've even heard speculation that that could refer to David, although that's in the alternate timeline. I don't think it could possibly refer to Christian Shepherd because one, he's dead, and two, he seems to be sided with the Man in Black since he was kind of the one who took Claire away and all that sort of thing. So I think it's pretty clear. So Reyes, Shepherd must refer to Jack. Austin, most likely refers to Kate, although I guess it could also refer to Sam Austin. Most likely Kate again. Quan, which, as Ilana says, could either be Sun or Jin. She doesn't know. And Ford is the fifth name, which, of course, refers to James Ford Sawyer. But who is the other person? Josh Spivey just called in. So do you have any thoughts on this, Josh?
We were talking about that on my show a little bit, and it's tough. You know, I don't want to suggest those other names that we've never heard of before that are cited on Wikipedia because it would just annoy me if, like, the answer was someone that we've never met and wouldn't recognize if their name was, like, flashed in front of our face. Like, after all these years, you know, to have, like, this big answer be someone that we've never met before, be like, oh, okay. I mean, I guess it could be a name of someone that we've had their name wrong or we just didn't know their last name.
Right. And one particular person whose last name we don't know, of course, at this point is Ilana. And so I'm wondering if maybe she could be a candidate. You know, she's also protecting the other candidates, you know, as, you know, kind of been hired as a bodyguard or whatever for them. But I wonder if, I mean, it's, I guess it's possible that maybe Ilana is also a candidate and she's there to protect all of them. She definitely knows a heck of a lot more than the rest of the candidates that we know of so far.
More than Richard.
Yeah. I mean, she knows way more than Richard, way more than Ben, way more than anybody who's ever seemed to know anything on this island, except for obviously Jacob and the Man in Black. But, you know, she has all of these insights into how Jacob works and how even the Man in Black works, you know, with the ash and all that kind of thing. So I think that's one possibility. Okay. So now, Josh, you brought up, there's at least three names that we know of that have not been crossed out in the cave. So, those names, and again, we've never heard these names before, but they're Hasra, H-A-A-S-R-A, that's number 56, Grimwalt, G-R-I-M-W-A-U-L-T, which is number 57, and Kaisea, which is number 60, K-Y-S-E-A. So possibly one of those last names could be Ilana's last name. Who knows? Here's the other possibility, and Diesel99 brought this up in the chat. I had been kind of thinking the same thing earlier. I wrote in my notes, is Ilana still counting Saeed, even though he's been turned into the Man in Black side? And if so, if she is counting Saeed, does that mean that she thinks that he can be turned back to Jacob's side? That maybe he's not past the point of no return. If you remember in the last episode, Saeed made a comment to Ben. You know, Ben says there's still time, and Saeed says, not for me, or something like that. And, you know, and of course he's got this evil grin, and he's holding this bloody knife and all that sort of thing. But so Saeed, I don't know if that... It seems as though Saeed's comment means that he knows that he's fully on the Man in Black side and he's not going to turn back. He's not interested in being on Jacob's side anymore. He just knifed, you know, Dogen and helped the Man in Black to get into the temple. So, as far as Saeed is concerned, I think he's fully on the Man in Black side. As far as Illana is concerned, I don't know. I don't know whether she could possibly even consider that he could be turned back, but maybe, you know, she knows something that we don't know and that Saeed doesn't know. But yeah, that is an interesting possibility, definitely. Okay, and by the way, I will definitely put a link to Lostpedia's article candidates in the show notes so that people can go through that list and look for themselves. And of course, there are lots of screen caps out there on Dark UFO's site and Sledge website and a number of other places on the internet too. Get Lost Podcast, I know, does a lot of them. In fact, I think that's where some of Dark UFO's screen caps come from, if I'm not mistaken. In any case, so we're moving on here. So Illana takes Ben at gunpoint and makes him dig his own grave. She shackles him to a tree and gives him this rudimentary shovel digging instrument and tells him to dig his own grave. And she says that she's doing this because of what he did to Jacob, not surprisingly. So in 2004, in the Flash Sideways timeline, Ben is tutoring Alex. That's Alexandra Rousseau, who was his sort of adopted daughter in the original timeline. Interestingly, if we think about when the events took place, Danielle was never on the island. Alex was never on the island at all, because we know that that those events took place in history in the 1980s, which would have been after the 1977 incident. And so Danielle never even came to the island. What were you going to say?
She would have been born in 88, I think. So it was like way after. So they
right.
Definitely like never like showed up, and who knows like where they were on their way to when they crashed on the island. Never learned that, I don't think.
Well, let's see. I'm trying to remember. I think Danielle did. Or was it Danielle? Somebody gave a story anyway about what they were doing. She said there was a science expedition, and they were off the coast of, was it, oh gosh, was it Fiji? I can't remember now. It was one of the Pacific Islands anyway. Well, no, Fiji. I'm trying to think. I think Fiji was the name of the island that Desmond said that he should have. Oh gosh, I don't know. I could look it up, but it's not that important. But it's going to drive me crazy anyway. okay, so where were we? So Danielle is apparently alive and well because Alex says to Dr. Linus, "My mom works two jobs just to pay for rent." So, you know, presumably that means that that Alex is living with Danielle. And Diesel 99 says doll trap tester, maybe, for Danielle's occupation. Alex then reveals and makes Dr. Linus promise not to reveal that the principal had relations with the nurse at school, like on campus. And she makes Dr. Linus promise not to reveal this. Now, of course, earlier in the episode, one of the other Flash Sideways moments that we saw, you know, Locke had been encouraging Ben to go for the principal's position, to sort of like take his job. And so this is going to obviously be a huge temptation for Dr. Linus to have this information and not use it against the principal. In 2007 on the island, Ben tries to bribe Miles with the $3.2 million that Miles wanted a long time ago. And this is interesting. This is funny, I think. Miles says that if he wanted to, he could dig up Nikki and Paolo's graves and get $8 million worth of diamonds. Now, when Nikki and Paolo were buried, nobody else knew about the diamonds that they had just buried. And so Miles obviously got this information by reading their dying thoughts, just like he's done for other people, like how he read Jacob's dying thoughts and so forth. So that's pretty hilarious. So Miles and Ben are the only people who know that Nikki and Paolo were buried with these diamonds. And by the way, that does come up later in the episode as well, this thing about the diamonds. So he says, look, there's $8 million worth of diamonds. Why would I want your $3.2 million or whatever you think you can get me, you know, if I spring you loose? So Miles is not interested in helping Ben out. And Miles also makes an interesting comment that... indicating that Jacob either didn't think or didn't hope that Ben would actually kill him until the actual moment that Ben plunged the knife into Jacob. Miles says that Jacob really didn't expect Ben to do that, which is really sad. And of course, I'm sure made Ben feel bad yet again for what he had done. You know, knowing now that he's been duped, he was duped by the man in black, and that he was just a pawn in his little game. In any case, so
I have a quick question: when Ben says to Miles that he can get off the island, was he referring to the frozen donkey wheel?
I mean, could be.
Why didn't he just do that anyway? I mean, he was tied up at that point, but before, why didn't he like? Why did he bother going back to the beach? Why didn't he just run off to the orchid and say, so long, I'm leaving? I couldn't think of another way he would get off the island. And I thought it was weird that he would bring it up then. I mean, maybe he was lying to Miles, but...
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Here's another thought on that. I mean, maybe he felt like he had to redeem himself for what he had done to Jacob. And you know, obviously we know that he's been working on Ilana's side ever since then. And maybe he sort of felt like this was his opportunity to sort of, in some small way, redeem himself for having murdered Jacob. You know, maybe that's why he's staying on the island, so that he can be on their side. All right.
I like that Ben sort of gets some redemption in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
Long.
To some degree, anyway. Josh, can you talk a little bit louder? I'm only getting like kind of parts of what you're saying.
Is that a little better?
Yeah, that's better.
All right.
So, Miles. Okay, we read that or talked about that. So Richard says of his non-aging. So Richard meets up with. And I must have lost a section of my notes here because I don't know. That's frustrating. Richard and met up with Hurley and Jack as they were on their way back to the temple. Richard says, oh, yeah, no, it's this way to the temple. Jack trusts, you know, him, and they're walking towards what they think is the temple. And Hurley asks Richard, why he doesn't age. And Richard says the same thing that we've heard him say before, that Jacob gave me a gift. This is what he told to the man in black, as a matter of fact, when Richard still thought it was a resurrected John Locke. He made the same comment to him that this was a gift from Jacob, his sort of non-aging. And Richard tells Hurley not to believe whatever it was that Jacob told him. First, you know, he's surprised that Jacob has talked to Hurley. And then he says, don't believe, you know, whatever he told you, don't believe it. And, you know, this seems obviously very uncharacteristic for Richard. And then Richard says, there's something I need to do. And they ask him what? And he says, die. So he continues walking off, and they follow him. In the flash sideways, Dr. Arst says to Ben, Linus, and of course this is after Ben, you know, approaches Dr. Arst and says, you know, would you, you know, about something about computers, right? You know, would you be able to hack into somebody's email account? And he's referring to the school nurse, so that they can get the evidence that they need to, you know, to expose the principal or to at least blackmail him. And so he makes this deal with Arst. You know, Arst wants a good parking spot and, you know, better equipment in his classroom. Linus promises. And then Arst says, Linus, you're a real killer. And that line sort of seemed to me, and I only thought this because we've had conversations before. You know, we talked before on the show about how it seems as though, like Jack especially, on more than one occasion, and Kate on at least one occasion in A Flash Sideways, has seemed to kind of have a moment of almost recognition or of almost being, almost remembering something from the original timeline, which, you know, seems like it would be impossible, right? But Ben almost got this kind of, he kind of got this odd look on his face, like when he was told he was a real killer, and then they cut to Ben on the island digging his own grave in 2007. So I thought that was kind of interesting. That it seemed as though they were trying to push us in that direction to think that this is once again like in the alternate timeline, somebody having almost a memory of something that happened in the original timeline. What were we going to say, Josh?
Well, about that. So, I mean, you were talking about it a little earlier, I know, but are we assuming that, you know, Ben was shot by Saeed and then left the island and is living his life, that alternate Ben went through that situation?
Yeah, that Ben was shot but now he's off the island.
Because, I mean, he definitely has some of the others talk in him, like he was being sort of coerced by them and talked to by Richard at that point. So maybe he's, you know, sort of thinking about, you know, I mean, he knows that the others were hostiles and he himself was sort of shot by Saeed.
Hmm.
So it would be kind of cool if he was thinking back to those moments back on the island. And I've, ever since we got, you know, these flash sideways and it sort of became clear of when it started, I've always really wanted to mesh, like, you know, like Ben's father is sick, so maybe they'll go to the hospital and they'll run into Jack and Roger Linus will be like, hey, you were that other janitor on the island and you haven't aged. What's going on? And Jack will be like, never met you before. I have no idea who you are.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, we've talked about the possibility of something like that happening before, but now we know for sure that one of these like old world, you know, Dharma Initiative folks from prior to the incident really is alive and potentially could run into one of our time travelers, you know, Jack or Kate or somebody.
It would be pretty epic.
That would be awesome. let's see. So yeah, that's a really good point. To kind of restate what you said there about Ben, so that maybe we know that, you know, Richard said that Ben would never be the same or something to that effect if he was taken and healed in the temple. And so apparently, I mean, that had to have happened, right? I mean, we saw that happen in the 1970s. You know, Saeed shot Ben, and so and that was prior to the incident. So if we, you know, if we're assuming that that's where the rift occurred, was at the incident, then definitely, yeah, Ben was shot even in the alternate timeline. And so he has been taken by the others when he was a young kid. And so that's a good point. Maybe he was kind of reflecting on those moments where he was shot at, and some of the other things that happened on the island. For sure, you know, we know that he has a recollection of what, you know, what happened on the island. You know, because, again, Roger kind of brought that up and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
So 2007, Richard leads Jack and Hurley to the Black Rock. You know, by the way, one more point on that. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but at least this is the first character that I'm able to think of off the top of my head in this moment. The first character where we've seen the character in the Flash sideways, like he's got his own Flash sideways, and he was, in fact, on the island at some point. Whereas like Jack, Kate, and Locke, they were never on the island in the alternate timeline. Ben, I think, is the first.
Is Ethan, from?
Oh, okay.
What Kate does.
That's true. But, so yeah, so he's
he was a little baby when those events took place. So
no, that's a good point. Yeah. So we have seen other people who were on the island, but this is the first like actual like Flash sideways that is centric to like somebody who has lived on the island or who's ever been to the island.
Right, exactly. Someone that could interact with the people that we've met, someone that remembers what happened. So they could confirm or deny certain theories that have been going around since the season started. But pretty exciting, and I'm very happy that they included Roger Linus and Ben Linus, and especially that conversation that went down. People have been talking about that for a while, just what's the connection, and will they remember, and all that. So it's very cool that they put all that in.
Yeah. Bailey Bear says in the chat, I still hope they tell us or show us how the ship got in the middle of the island, referring to the Black Rock. Yeah, I don't think that they're ever going to get to that. I think that would be cool, but at this point, I think that's going to remain a mystery.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Bailey Bear also has a good point that that in this alternate timeline, Ben seems to get along really well with his dad. I mean, he's treating, you know, not just taking care of him, you know, he's taking care of him in his home and, you know, giving him like an organic, I thought that was kind of funny too, an organic microwave dinner. Do they actually have those? Like you're microwaving something that's organic. I don't know. It's just something that seems wrong about that, but.
Well, I was going to say if anywhere has them, it would be Southern California, but that's where you are. So I guess you would know.
You know what? I have seen organic microwave popcorn, so I guess an organic frozen meal probably is not too far off because they're both microwavable organic. I don't know.
You're right. It does seem like a well, like when people go to McDonald's and get, you know, like the Big Mac and a Diet Coke.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway. Okay. So 2007. Richard leads Jack and Hurley to the Black Rock. They make it there, and Richard says, "This is the first time I've ever come back." So, it you know, we get a very, very, very strong hint, I would say, that Richard, in fact, did come to the island on the Black Rock. If that wasn't the case, I would be very surprised at this point after a line like that. And many, many fans have been speculating for a long time that that's, you know, what the deal was with Richard. Especially because of the way he was dressed when he and Ben first meet, you know, and his sort of longer hair and things like that. And some people thought he looked piratey in any case. So Richard says, Jacob touched me and that's why he can't, kill himself. And he says that someone else has to do it for him. And so good old Dr. Jack agrees to euthanize Richard Alpert. Just like a good American doctor should, you know, like what the heck? But obviously Jack has an ulterior motive here. And so Hurley's... What's that?
He seemed very excited about it too. He's like, I'll do it.
I know. Yeah. So Hurley gets totally scared and he's like, you know, okay, if you need me, I'm just going to be far away from here. And, Jack stays there with Richard, lights the fuse and Hurley runs off And Jack's just sitting there with Richard, having a conversation with him, while the fuse is burning down. And he tells Richard about what he saw in the mirrors at the lighthouse. So basically what's going on here is that Richard is doubting Jacob, and Jack's trying to talk him out of, you know, killing himself and saying, look, Jacob does have a purpose, you know, still. He knows what he's doing. You know, he wanted me to go to the lighthouse to look in the mirrors to see, and, you know, he tells Richard all this stuff that Richard probably has no idea about, you know, about how, Jack could see his childhood home in the mirrors. And I mean, this is all news to Richard, it seems. And so, Richard kind of, maybe has a spark of faith again, hopefully. And Jack has an incredible amount of faith because he's so confident that the dynamite's not going to explode. And, sure enough, the fuse fizzles out just in time. And, you know, this was a really, really bold risk on Jack's part because, you know, not, I mean, Richard, you know, maybe it was a bold risk for him. He thought that if someone else did it, then he would die. Maybe because that's kind of what happened to Jacob, that he couldn't be killed or he couldn't die on his own, but someone else could kill him. So maybe that's kind of what the deal was with Richard. But you know, it was probably a lot riskier for Jack to do that than he realized. We know several of the candidates have already died. In fact, there have been tons and tons of candidates who have died in the past. And we even know some of the candidates who have died, like John Locke being one of them, of course. And yet Jack seems to think that he's invincible, just because, you know, Jacob has a plan for him or whatever. So kind of dumb, but, you know, Jack's faith, I guess, you know, somehow led him in the right direction, or at least he got really lucky because the fuse fizzled out right before hitting the dynamite stick, so that there was no explosion.
We had an interesting theory on during my show about that.
Okay.
Kind of confusing about getting crossed, names getting crossed out. He could die, so it's sort of obvious that, or it would have seemed like a huge risk for Jack, that candidates can't die until their names are crossed out. So,
it's
almost like with what we sort of said in sort of a crazy, you know, scenario was that the whole plane crash, the reason why this group of people survived is their names were not crossed out. But, you know, once, I guess, Jacob found out who they were, or whoever was crossing off those names found out who they were and sort of studied them, crossed their names off, and they could then die. And it sort of goes back to that original problem from season one that Locke even brings up, I think, at one point, or someone brings up, you know, how did we all survive this crash with only superficial injuries?
Right, yeah. I do remember that line. Bailey Bear also brings up something in the chat. Jack seemed to turn into season one Locke, like with his faith in the island and so forth, that he suddenly seems to have after looking in the mirrors. But that's a really good theory. I've never heard that one before. But I like it. You know, candidates can't die until their names are crossed out. Maybe it's backwards from what we think. Although something contrary to that theory, that came to me just now was that, fake Locke, the man in black, when he's in the cave with James, with Sawyer, he crosses out John Locke. And so we know that John Locke was already dead at that point. And then he crosses out the name John Locke.
Good point.
I still love that theory, though. That's a good one.
But that's the best part about the theory, is though, going back and forth and saying, no, it doesn't work. Oh, but if you do this. And
hey, that's why we do the podcast. It makes it so much more fun to, like, to have a conversation about it and be able to kind of debate and figure out what theories work. I'm sure everyone knows that I've had some theories that were way off. So
we all have
for sure. Let's see. So, another kind of point about the fuse fizzling out, other possibilities, other theories might be that, maybe Jacob somehow stopped it. Or maybe it was, you know, maybe it was a coincidence or maybe it was fate. I tend to think it wasn't a coincidence. If anything, it could have, maybe Jacob had something to do with it directly, or, you know, maybe it was fate, you know, had something to do with their destiny. Okay. So, the man in black visits Ben and, he makes an interesting comment. He kind of makes a proposal to Ben, and basically offers him a chance to get free. This is another thing I found interesting. There almost seemed to be, for me, possibly a connection between how Ben's shackles just open automatically at the man in black's whim. You know, he thinks it and it happens. That seemed to me to be somewhat similar to the fuse fizzling out for some reason. Like maybe, you know, Jacob willed for the fuse to fizzle out, and that's what saved them. Kind of like the man in black willed for, you know, Ben's shackles to open. By the way, we have a friend joining us from the smoke hatch. You want to introduce yourself? It's been a while since you've been on the show.
Yeah, I work during the day now, but I'm off tomorrow, so I've come to join you in the wee hours of the East Coast night.
Cool. We appreciate that. So you're from the Smoke Hatch podcast?
Yes. It is me, Steve.
Steve from the Smoke Hatch, which which I understand has some explicit language, but we won't hold that against you.
I hope not. That's just how we do things on our show, but I don't do that on the talk show.
That's cool. All right. So Steve, thanks for being here. And just, Spivvy, you can jump in anytime with, any comments you have about anything. So thanks for joining us.
Yep.
All right. Okay. So getting back to, the man in black visiting Ben, he makes a really interesting comment. He says, once we're gone, someone's going to need to be in charge of the island. He's basically giving Ben the opportunity to be the leader on the island again. And he sets him free. So Ben has every opportunity to leave. Well, not to mention that if Ben was to stay there and Alana saw that the shackles were, you know, were undone, she would probably assume that Ben had been trying to escape and that he got caught. And so he... Basically, the man in black made an offer that Ben couldn't refuse to escape from Alana at this point. And so Ben goes running, and Alana chases after.
The real cool thing about that scene for me was that he offered him not just to be like the leader of the others or whatever Ben was, but to almost be like the next Jacob, it sounded like. To really be a powerful person on the island, finally, what he's wanted all this time. And you know, and in the end, he doesn't take it. So it's such a huge step for Ben.
Now that's an interesting comment. I'm glad you brought that up because I hadn't thought about it exactly in that way. But in being like the next Jacob, but he would be in league with the man in black.
Right.
He's kind of the opposite of the good candidates, you know, Jacob's candidates. That's an interesting idea. Yeah. And I like that.
Now, did he say that they have to leave someone in charge or that they're going to? I mean, if they have to leave someone in charge, then that almost is a burden for him. Because I'm the way the show has gone, I assume someone has to take that role. It can't, you know, he can't just say, okay, you're now the leader. It has to be, someone has to say, yes, I want to be the leader once you've gone.
So who's the leader now that Dogen is dead? Is that what you're saying? Like the leader of Jacob's side?
Well, more that, you know, Locke wants to leave with his little group. And from the way he was talking, I'm thinking that in order for them to leave, they have to leave someone in charge. You know, they can't just leave off the island. They have to leave someone in charge of the island. Now that Jacob is dead, you know, if he leaves, there's no one left. So, and I'm thinking that he has to find someone that wants to stay on the island and really wants to be in charge. And and she was hoping, I think, that Ben wanted that role. I really think of anybody else in his group that would want that. So it's interesting, I think. And it's, I mean, the whole show has been a lot of this free will stuff where, you know, Ben had a want to kill Jacob and such. So I really think that's an important aspect for Smokey. He was sort of counting on Ben to take the reins, as you say, like the evil candidate for to run the island.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. And Diesel929 says, a sucker to keep pressing the button, so to speak. You know, referring to Ben if he was to take that role. Yeah, that's kind of an interesting way of looking at it. You know, like the guy who's just following orders, you know, and blindly doing what he's told.
I'm wondering, though, do you think that the way that, you know, Lockwood had approached him and said be in charge, do you think that he was referring to a new Jacob, or do you think he was referring to a new whatever he is to the island?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I think. Yeah, not to be a new Jacob, because obviously the man in black is opposed to Jacob.
Yeah. What if we, you know, find out at some point that, you know, there was like some sort of like split leadership or something like that, and that's why they have to have, maybe there's candidates for both things. Maybe there's candidates for more than we know. That, you know, maybe there needs to be a new Richard Albert or a new Temple Master now, since Dogen's dead. I mean, it could be a lot of things that need replaced on this island because they're getting taken out, you know. And then Richard wanting to die was pretty interesting, you know, because I was talking to Matt and I was saying, you know, I'm wondering how the way Jacob works, it seems that he tells people only certain things, you know, because Albert was saying, you know, he didn't even know anything and his whole life meant nothing. But I'm wondering if he does know something, it's maybe just what he knows doesn't make sense without someone else's knowledge of maybe something Jacob told them, and it's like a big puzzle.
Right.
You know, and with all their knowledges together, they find out their purpose or something like that. I don't know. It seems kind of cheesy, but I've always been I've been wondering that since like the beginning of the season.
Well, yeah. Well,
I think that there needs to be a balance of the light and the dark.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I definitely would agree that if there's going to be a new Jacob, that there has to be a new man in black, whatever he is. I mean, if he has to put someone new on, I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I really like that idea, too. Go ahead, Steve.
All I was going to say would be, I think what would be even a crazier ending for Man in Black wasn't even to be let him off the island. The worst thing that could happen to him was for him to stay there and be the same for the rest of eternity, you know? So they could just replace Jacob and maybe trap him. Maybe there has to be, Jacob has to die or not be there, or that force has to not be there for him to be able to leave. I don't know.
Well, maybe this is exactly what you were getting at, but maybe there's always been this cycle of, you know, people in the role of Jacob and people in the role of the man in black on this island. Maybe forever this island has existed. And there's always been a Jacob and a man in black, you know, and this is just the current Jacob who just died and the current man in black who's getting off the island. And that kind of goes along with the idea that they both need someone to replace them. And so the man in black is trying to get Ben to become the new man in black, and that whoever is the candidate who's chosen will replace Jacob. You know, that would be interesting if this is kind of like one of those things, like chicken and an egg. Like there never was, you know, an original Jacob or an original man in black. Like there's always been like somebody on the island, like on each side.
That would be
cool. I don't know.
I like that. And I there's also the, you know, I've heard this a couple places. Matt, especially on our podcast, has always talked about some sort of prophecy. And now that we got these two people, you know, Man in Black and Jacob, with some sort of prophecy, and they were children a long, 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 you know, long time ago or whatever, thousands of years ago, or even since the beginning of the island, and they were bred to one of them be the leader, you know, and the other to be the other thing. And you know, they got to the crossroads or whatever, and Jacob wound up being Jacob, and Man in Black wound up being Matt. I'm wondering if that's why he feels trapped and wants to leave, because it's been so long.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting, though. Okay. Let's see. All right. So let's get back to the next thing about my notes is the alternate timeline. So Ben, it seems that Ben decided to blackmail the principal after all. He's got these emails printed out that apparently Dr. Arst got for him. And basically Ben demands his job. He says, look, you're going to resign for personal reasons or whatever, health reasons, whatever you want. And you're going to recommend me. And that's what's going to happen. The principal then blackmails Ben. He pulls up an email from Alexander Rousseau and says that he won't write her a letter of recommendation to Yale. Of course, the principal is a Yale graduate. He won't write her this glowing recommendation to Yale unless Ben drops his blackmail attempt, because he knows that Ben, you know, is going to put someone else first before himself. And we find out later in the episode what ends up ultimately happening with that. 2007, back on the island, Ilana chases Ben. Ben finds a gun in the jungle, and he turns around, he aims it at Ilana while she's still running towards him, and makes Ilana drop her gun, and he explains why he killed Jacob. He says basically that he sacrificed everything, including his own daughter, Alex, to the island in the name of Jacob. And, you know, and he lost everything that he had. The only thing that he, you know, that he loved, was taken away from him because he was trying to defend the island and defend Jacob, you know, ultimately Jacob. And so Ilana asks where Ben will go. And Ben says to Locke, because he's the only one who will have me. And then Ilana says something interesting. I'll have you. And then she picks up her gun and walks off. And Ben is just stunned. And finally, after staring in disbelief for a few moments, he slowly begins following her, Ilana. And so it seems in this moment, and we find out, you know, later that apparently he chose to go with Ilana after all, and to not, you know, follow the Man in Black, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, if for a guy who, you know, he feels bad that he got duped into killing Jacob. He was trying to be on Ilana and Ilana's side, going along with them and trying to hide the fact that he killed Jacob. But he was still choosing to be on their side, rather than going with the other group. And so, you know, and now he's got this choice, and the Man in Black, you know, gives him this offer to be the ultimate ruler of the island. And yet he's choosing to go back with Ilana. So I think that shows a lot about Ben's character, his loyalty, and sort of, what, you know, what he's really all about. I mean, he's been an evil guy. He's done terrible things. He's murdered. He's, you know, I mean, it doesn't, you don't find too many people much worse than Ben as far as the things that he's done in the past. But now he's sort of getting this, some degree of redemption, I think, by choosing to follow Ilana and being on Jacob's side, even after killing Jacob. He's choosing to side with Jacob, even though it means that he's losing out, supposedly, on ultimate rulership, you know, leadership and ruling the island and so forth. So good on you, Ben. Well done. Bailey Bear said, I thought he was going to die in this episode by the promo. And I think that's exactly what everyone, you know, was thinking, seeing the promo. And it was like, wait, did they just totally spoil that Ben is going to die in this episode? And I'm really glad that that wasn't the case. I think that would have made everybody very angry.
And it's not like them either. So I was, I mean, I wouldn't say I thought he was going to, but I definitely thought it was a possibility, and I agree. I would have, I think we probably would have stormed ABC if they had been like, he just died, and like, yeah, we told you in the promo last week that he was going to die. Sorry, you watched the commercial. away the biggest piece.
Yeah, I would hope that they wouldn't be dumb enough to give away something like that. I mean, they've had some fairly big spoilers in the previews in the past, though, so I wouldn't put it past them. But hopefully whoever did that in the past, you know, either got fired or at least had a really very good talking to and knows better than to spoil things in the previews.
One for next week really gave away nothing. I don't even really...
I know. We'll get there. We'll get there. Okay, so 2004 in the alternate timeline, we find out Ben didn't do it after all. He's in the principal's office. He's looking at the principal's name plate on the desk, and Alex walks in, and it almost seems like, you know, Ben is getting ready to like throw out the old nameplate and take his seat. And so you think for a moment that Ben did it, that Ben, you know, in spite of Alex, he just went ahead and took the principal position and went ahead with his blackmail plan. But Alex walks in. And she's excited because she got this letter of recommendation, and she basically says, you know, was it you that got the principal to do this? And he's like, no, I can't take credit for that. Then the principal walks in and demands to know why Ben's in his office and so forth. And basically, Ben didn't do it, I guess his alternate timeline self is sort of being redeemed in this moment too. He had been plotting and scheming, you know, to do something horrible to the principal, to ruin his career or at least, you know, to take his job through kind of nefarious means, and including, you know, breaking a promise to a student that she wouldn't, you know, that Ben wouldn't tell what Alex had told him. In any case, here's what I thought, and this is another one of my cranky fanatic moments. Sorry, Big O, but why the heck not just play along and wait until after Alex got her letter and got into Yale, and then blackmail the principal?
I think the only thing stopping him is that they added that line from the principal where he said something like, I'll torpedo her completely. So thinking that would do something afterward that would hurt her. But, I mean, if he was disgraced for hooking up with the nurse, I doubt that they would take back his wonderful letter. Say, now we'll take your word now that she's not as good as you said in the letter. But I definitely thought the same.
Well, okay, think about it. I mean, like, it totally doesn't make sense. Like, if Alex already got into Yale and was a good student, and then, you know, Ben blackmails the principal, so what if the principal at that point says, you know, oh, well, actually, I didn't really mean that letter that I wrote. I mean, what's he going to say? I mean, I guess the worst he could say is she lied and I didn't really write that letter. She forged my signature. I don't know. But at the same time, if he was to say something like that, then Ben comes out and destroys his reputation, you know, with the original blackmail plan, you know. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something here, but it seems to me that Ben still has plenty of opportunity to get his principal position if he wants to, once Alex is already established at Yale. That was just my thought. But they didn't give any hint of that in the episode, but I mean, come on. Come on. All right. No. End rant. Okay, so 2007, Ben comes back to the beach and helps Sun put up her tarp. Miles, we see, is holding one of the diamonds on the beach, and so apparently he dug up the grave and got the diamonds, which is pretty hilarious. We see Alana crying. And by the way, there's this music kind of going on in the background, and Hurley and Jack reunite with Sun and give hugs and shake hands with their friends. It's so reminiscent of scenes from seasons long past, you know, where very similar things have happened. You know, old friends reunite as they come back to the beach camp, you know. And this time...
We were confused on my show about that, about the reunion. At first, when she hugs her, him, hugs Hurley, I'm like, oh, wow, like, she hasn't seen him in a while. Then I thought, she saw him, like, 3 days ago. Like, they were on the, you know, they were chilling together. Like, on the,
yeah.
on the plane. And he, they got flashed back to 77, but, I mean, when she runs up to them like that, I wondered if Jin was with them, but he wasn't. But I thought it was a little much of a greeting she gave those two guys. I mean,
oh,
like,
well,
4 days ago, she wanted to kill Jack.
Well, okay, here's my thought about that. I think Sun, you know, maybe was just happy that they didn't get killed in the new purge, if you want to call it that, that took place at the temple. In fact, I like that. I hadn't thought of calling it a purge, but I'm going to call it that, the new purge, or the temple purge.
Purge 2.0.
There you go. So I kind of think that Sun was just happy to see that they were alive. Because nobody knew what had happened to them. I mean, remember Lennon in the last episode was saying that, you know, nobody knew where they were. Because they went off on their own. And so, you know, I think Sun was just happy to see that her friends were alive. That's my thought on that. So there was one other thing that kind of with this whole beach reunion scene, that also seemed to be reminiscent of, a previous episode, a long time ago. And I can't remember who it was coming back to the beach at the time, but they saw Juliet there with the beach camp. And then they kind of got upset. I think it may have been Kate, who saw Juliet there. And, it was kind of like, what's she doing here? You know, she's not one of us. She's one of them. And this time the odd man out seemed to be Ben. You know, he's the guy who's kind of standing off, you know, in this, you know, in the background, kind of looking at what's going on and not, being embraced and having his hand shaken by the people who are returning. He's, even though he's kind of redeemed himself in some way, he seems to still be somewhat, ostracized, I guess, from the rest of the group. That was kind of my thought watching this, anyway. Okay. So let's see. Ah. And then the final moment of the episode, this is very cool. So if you remember, when Jack and Hurley went off a couple of episodes, to the lighthouse, Jacob told Hurley that somebody was coming to the island. And we finally now know we know the answer from the final moment of this episode. A submarine starts coming up out of the water. The spyglass comes up and, a man in the sub says, "Sir, there are people on the beach. Should we stop?" And Charles Widmore answers, "No, proceed as planned." And the other man says, "Yes, sir, Mr. Widmore." So Charles Widmore is the one who's coming back to save the island. Well, hopefully to save the island, but this is cool. I mean, who better to come back to the island, right? Than Charles Widmore. Now it'll be interesting to see what happens with, whether he and Ben will get along. Another thought about that. I wonder what Charles's plan is. I mean, is he just going to try to kill everybody? That kind of seemed to be what happened when he sent mercenaries to the island to go after Ben. And then, you know, Kimi decides, well, I have free reign to kill anybody that I want. And so I'm going to kill everybody. But I don't know. Cause Charles and Ben, obviously they have a history of not getting along. And yet right now it seems like they both should be on Jacob's side, right? I mean, Ben, we know, just chose Jacob's side, or at least so it seems, and unless he's got some evil scheme that he's only going to be pretending to be on Jacob's side, and later he'll show up to the Man in Black and he'll have done something evil to sabotage, you know, Jacob's plans or whatever, but I kind of doubt that. I think at this point, Ben is definitely on Jacob's side. Charles Widmore, I think, is definitely on Jacob's side. You know, he's another former leader of the others, and, you know, in spite of him being kicked off the island, you know, he says he was the one who kind of convinced John Locke that, you know, that he had to go back or the wrong side would win. And so it seems as though he was on Jacob's side at that point. That was my understanding anyway. You know, and if anyone has a different opinion, you know, I'm open to suggestions because I think that could still be up for debate. But in any case, it seems that Charles Woodmore is a friend to Jacob and that he is somehow going to be instrumental in taking out the Man in Black. Now, how in the world they plan to kill the Man in Black or stop him anyway, I have no idea. We know the Man in Black wants to get off the island. But we also know that bullets can't harm him, knives being stabbed into his chest can't harm him, and that he can also turn into this apparently invincible smoke monster anytime he wants. So unless Charles Woodmore has this awesome, gigantic-sized dustbuster to, like, suck up the smoke monster, you know, or, like, the Ghostbusters pack, yeah, I can't imagine how Charles is possibly going to defeat the smoke monster, but I guess we will find out in an upcoming episode.
My thoughts on that are simply just from Widmore in the past, that he's going to back whichever side he thinks will get him control of the island faster.
Oh, well, that's interesting, too.
He hasn't... I mean, obviously everybody on the show has their good and their bad, but and Widmore first seemed just evil and then different, but I just think he just wants control of the island. I don't think he cares who's in charge or who what he has to do to get it. I mean, he'll go, you know, with Locke's team if it means that he gets what he wants. But that's what I think about Widmore anyway.
Hmm. Okay, an interesting theory about that.
There was one Easter egg in this episode that I thought was worth pointing out. There was a book next to Ben on the beach, and there's a link to a screenshot of it up on the blog. The book is called The Chosen, and it's a novel about two teenage boys, Jewish boys, who form a friendship, though they come from different worlds. That's according to Wikipedia. And I've also got a link to that Wikipedia article for the book and also where you can get it on Amazon. So once again, obviously, religion plays a key role in this novel, much like the novel that Dogen was reading in the previous episode. So again, for more information on that, you can check out the blog, thelostmeister.blogspot.com.
Yeah, of course, as always, if you notice anything that we missed, then you can certainly email. Of course, the email address, I don't usually give it out on the live show, but it's in the, you know, the MP3s if you subscribe to the podcast. But it's thelostmeister@gmail.com. So that's THELOST. MEISTER @gmail.com. And also, I don't think I really hardly ever mentioned that I actually have voicemail too. The phone number where you can call to leave me voicemail is 909. That's 909 area code in the United States. 909-25-JOSH-M, short for Josh Meister. So. You can leave me a message there if you would like to phone in a message and leave me a voicemail too. You can do that. Okay. All right. So the only thing that we have in the way of spoilers is from the preview, which is practically nothing. there are some quick little flashes of Kate, Jack, and Sawyer. And Sawyer says, "You and me are getting the hell off this island." That's it. that's pretty much it. Sorry, what was that?
And a shot of Kate crying.
Ah, and Kate crying, yeah.
Or set, at least.
Right. So, not a whole lot to go on there. So I hope you weren't expecting too much from the preview this week. Of course, last week we thought there was like a major spoiler and that Ben was going to die, and thankfully that didn't happen, because Ben is way too awesome of a character, but... All right, so I think that'll do it for this week. So thanks to everybody who called in and participated in the chat. It's been a great show, and we look forward to talking with you again next week. So until next time, stay lost and namaste. If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is The Lost Meister, that's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.